on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, Gordamila Malguiv, the two Johnnies agus Afric on Spree Tranona in you, Dairdine on Shock 2, their Varta is Misha Shane Dawson agus Tautu at Eichstocht, like game on, 2FM. Coming up between now and 7pm, Bernard Jackman is in studio to preview England versus Ireland as Andy Farrell names his matchday squad for Saturday's Six Nations encounter. The League of Ireland Women's Premier Division kicks off this weekend, so Rebecca Cray and Anthony Pine are standing by to give us all the info on the upcoming season. There's plenty of positivity surrounding Irish athletics at present as we edge closer to the Summer Olympics. And with that in mind, we'll be chatting to medal hopeful Ciarán McGeehan, and a man with an encyclopedic knowledge of all things athletics will be in studio, RTE Sports' Greg Allen. All that plus the latest news headlines makes up the show as always. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Well, D'Eve, agus Faltariv on show, before we get chatting, it's competition time again. We here at Game On are teaming up with Dove Men Plus Care to give away some fantastic prizes this week. This is your chance to get your hands on Dove Advanced Deodorant, designed to be tough on sweat, not on skin, with a daily prize of a gift hamper packed full of Dove Men Deodorant and Body Wash. Plus, tomorrow, we'll put all our daily winners in a draw for a chance to win our ultimate prize to see the team you support with an epic €1,500 sports package from Dove that you can put towards your match tickets, your hotel stay, and even some spending money as well. So for a chance to win today's Dove Men Hamper and get your name in the draw for that brilliant sports package prize, all you've got to do is tell us the answer to this question. Who is the manager of the Ireland Women's National Football Team? Text the word Dove, your answer, name and email address to 51552 right now, and we'll announce the winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all of the details.
Game On.
Rugby.
But our first port of call in the company of Bernard Jackman is rugby, because Andy Farrell has revealed his hand for the team to play England this weekend in a match that could potentially see Ireland claim the Six Nations Championship as Irish fans hope for a grand slam. The big talking point is that Hugo Keenan returns after injury. Two changes on the bench. Finlay Beelan returns with Ollie Yeager missing out. Ian Henderson replaces James Ryan, who picked up an arm injury at training yesterday and will miss the rest of the Six Nations. A bicep injury there. It's a 6-2 split on the bench. Kieran Frawley is on the bench, so no Gary Ringrose in the squad. So Bernard Jackman, what were your overall thoughts when you saw this Ireland team named?
I think obviously great news that Hugh Keenan is back. I didn't expect many changes apart from that. There was potential that Ryan Baird would have started at six, but in fairness to Farrelly, he's been loyal to Peter Mann. He obviously was captain. And then the 6-2, there was a strong chance we were going to go with that again, having worked so well against Wales. And that probably meant that Gary Ringrose was going to miss out, just with Frawley giving you much more cover. You have to be very careful that you cover as many options as you can with only two backs. And Frawley, by the nature of the fact he plays 10, centre and fullback, just probably edges out Gary Ringrose, who would be very frustrated that he's back fit. But that's a really good sign for Ireland, that a player of his quality can't just jump straight back in and maybe needs an injury to get back in and show what he can do. But very strong team. And obviously the only downside is James Ryan picking up that injury yesterday. But in the lock position, you know, Ian Henderson will come in and he knows he'll have to perform when he gets off the bench, because I thought James Ryan was excellent when he came on against Wales and added a real punch and physicality which we needed at the time. So yeah, all in all, a strong selection for Farrelly. We've been pretty lucky in the Six Nations with injuries. I know the extra fallow week is a help, but all in all, we're in a good place.
You mentioned the strength and depth, and that does see Gary Ringrose miss out on the matchday squad overall. And our own Michael Corcoran put that to Andy Farrell earlier today on media duty. He's speaking about the inclusion of Hugo Keenan and indeed Gary Ringrose missing out.
Yeah, obviously he's worked unbelievably hard to get back to full fitness and train really, really well this week. So he's a world-class fullback, isn't he? So he goes straight back into the side and plays in what is a good lineup, you know, for us. So look, it's great at the minute that we've got such good players who are not actually playing, you know, and we certainly need them. The whole squad and the depth of the whole squad with the back-to-back games of the last two games of the Six Nations.
As you said, there are some players who are in pretty good nick and in good form, but they just can't get into a matchday squad.
Some of it is just circumstances. Some of them were injured. Let's take Gary Ringrose, for example. I mean, he'd fit back into any side in world rugby, wouldn't he? But it's just the circumstances, and Gary understands that with how Bundy and Robbie are playing, etc., and with the dynamics of the 6-2 bench, and etc. He's fully understanding of that. But as I said, you know, it's a nutritional game, isn't it? Test match rugby, and something's surely going to happen this weekend.
Bernard, is this the strongest 15 that we could have seen from Ireland, and is it the correct decision to go 6-2 on the bench with Gary Ringrose missing out?
Yeah, I think it is. I think this game, I think England will go back to basics. They'll go back to the game plan that Bortwick used to win a premiership with Leicester, and in fairness, that led him to a World Cup semi-final, not without its critics, but it's very much based on set piece and power and kicking and big hits and collisions. So having six forwards who can come on and you know, turn the game or finish the game off is something that wasn't really in our locker traditionally. But I think the emergence of the Ryan Bears, the quality of our back row to be able to have, you know, Jack Conan on the bench, the emergence of Joe McCarthy has given us that. And also, to be fair, injuries to the likes of Jimmy O'Brien and Matt Hansen, you know, also changed the perspective a little bit. Like, we really don't have that many other outside backs that would come in. Sean McCluskey, in fairness, has lost out, and he's done well. But, you know, yeah, I think it's because we really want to go after them up front that he's sticking with 6-2 this week.
Well, I do want to get your thoughts on what you're expecting from England and how we do go about that, and if it is indeed targeting their forwards as well. But Andy Farrell was asked about what his expectations were from this England team come this weekend.
You're always preparing for them to be totally at their best, and if that's the case, then they're going to be unbelievably hard to beat, and that's how it should be, isn't it? England versus Ireland in the Test match rugby at Twickenham, so we're expecting nothing less. One of the main reasons why I love the Six Nations so much is that the emotions and the ramifications, they change week on week, and, you know, I've no doubt that England were looking forward to going up to Murrayfield and hopefully winning up there. They'll be disappointed not to do that, but you get another chance, don't they, to put that right against us. I suppose the same happened with Scotland losing on the bell against France. That changed the dynamics of their their 2 weeks leading into the England game, I've no doubt, and that's why we love the Six Nations so much. So it ebbs and flows, and that's why the games are always so hard fought and intense.
Hard fought and intense. Will this be a tight encounter, Bernard?
On paper, no. On form, no. But there's still that, I suppose, memory in my mind of how England found an extra 20% against South Africa in that World Cup semi-final. Again, looking at these players who I've been really impressed with in the Premiership and also in Europe this year, but just for whatever reason, those first three games in English jersey in the Six Nations hasn't clicked. And ironically, or worryingly for Steve Bortwick, his third match, round three, was probably the worst performance against Scotland, where their basic skill level looked to be deplorable, and they're better players than that. So it'll be interesting if they can fix that in these 2 weeks. There's been murmurings that some of the players are talking off the record to the media saying that they're in too much defence and not enough attack, and that's always a fine balancing act for a coach like Bortwick when you bring in a new defence coach but the other coaches stay the same, that the focus does become a little bit over-emphasised on one area of the game, and certainly they have made improvements in their defence, and it is a new system. It's obvious what they're trying to do. It's far from perfect. I think Ireland will see lots of opportunities in what they've put on tape in the first three games. But again, will they be better now, the fourth game up? But it's a tricky one. I think if Bortwick, so the problem is Bortwick, because of fan discontent, because of murmurings of, you know, people leaving Twickenham early. And this wasn't all Bortwick's fault. Someone was down to Eddie Jones. But there's a pressure on him now to go out and entertain. And that's not really natural to his personality or his belief how the game should be played. And they have tried to entertain a little bit more in the first three games. It hasn't worked. And I actually think they'd be better off going back to, I suppose, his beloved game, which is, you know, set piece, kick, chase, defence, to give them a better chance of beating Ireland. Because I think their attacking game isn't evolved enough yet to go toe-to-toe with us. But if they try and, I suppose, develop on Saturday, I think we'll win easily. But if they basically go back to plan A, I think it could be quite a difficult afternoon with us still being good enough to win, but certainly not having all our own way.
Do you feel Steve Borthwick is brave enough to go back to basics as opposed to trying to please the masses with a game plan he's not comfortable with?
It's a big one, because I think the fear for him would be losing heavily to Ireland, which would be a massive blow to him, put massive pressure on him, put massive pressure on his team, and maybe set them back a long way. So I would say the main focus should be to be competitive. And as I said, to be competitive, I think their best chance is to go back to the type of rugby they played in the World Cup. But to do that, will he send mixed messages to players? What will the crowd think if they go back to basics and, for whatever reason, Ireland is too good and end up winning by 20 anyway? So it's a very, very tricky one. I think he has the backbone to do it, but I can't wait to see how he sets his team up.
Well, he has made three changes in personnel and one positional switch in his side, with Emmanuel Feyiwoboso will make his first start for England. Scrum half Alex Mitchell and lock George Martin also return to the side. Are there any individuals you would be concerned about, or does it just come back to the fact that on paper Ireland are just completely in a different class to England?
Now, Feyiwoboso is a top quality player. He's been unbelievably good for Exeter Chiefs. Obviously, there was a bit of a battle between Wales and England for his services. He decided to go with England and came off the bench against Scotland and just looked like he was ready to play international rugby. So he's quite an orthodox. He works off his wing a lot. He's incredibly powerful. And he is someone that Farrell would be keeping a close eye on. Ben Earl has been outstanding at number eight. Very powerful, very athletic. George Martin's come back in the second row from injury. Real tough, rugged second row. And I suppose the interesting thing was, there was a big rumour this week that Marcus Smith was going to start at 10 and combine him with Alex Mitchell, the Northampton scrum half, who was injured against the Scotland, didn't play, and was badly missed. And that would have been a very exciting halfback partnership, but he decided to stick with four to start and Marcus Smith on the bench. So Marcus Smith coming off the bench again will test Ireland's defence in a way we haven't been tested in the first three games. But so far, so good. I mean, I think how we've defended, how we've attacked, our set piece, our discipline, have all been, you know, more than adequate, and we're just playing well in a lot of different areas. And as I said, I think the level this year in the Six Nations, so far, obviously things can change, but it looks like there's Ireland, and everyone else is kind of in rebuild mode or just struggling to find a little bit of momentum.
Yeah, Stephen Ferris was on kind of making that point that it hasn't been the most entertaining championship overall. Obviously, from an Irish perspective, it's gone, well, perfectly, to be fair. But has it been disappointing in your eyes, or has it been surprising in any way that the other teams haven't been as competitive?
Yeah, no, I think if you look historically, the year after a World Cup is often a mixed year because so many teams have change of coaches or players retiring, etc. And it can be a little bit kind of frustrating, really, because teams lose momentum, or and the teams who have the least amount of change tend to do well. And Ireland are obviously that team. But I think some of the games have been close but haven't been exciting or haven't been entertaining. And it's a big issue for World Rugby. I know they're very conscious of it at the moment. They're looking at all the laws, all the referee interpretations to try and make sure that coaches and players feel that the reward for playing attractive rugby is worth the risk. And I think at the moment, at international level in particular, a lot of teams feel that it's too risky to play ball in hand and take chances. And that's, we're seeing that then with a lot of probably monotonous and mindless kicking, which isn't enjoyable to watch.
So final question, Bernard. All signs are pointing towards Ireland come Saturday night being four matches played, four matches won, and possibly with 20 points on the board.
Yeah, it does look like that. I've looked at this English team inside out, and as I said, I really respect their players individually, and I think there's very little between them all individually, but collectively, so far, they've only really had one good performance in the last 12 months that would make you stand up and go, ooh. And that was against South Africa in a World Cup semi-final. And that's not enough, you know. Twickenham will get the best out of them, but I watched them against Wales. That wasn't enough either. So, yeah, if Ireland perform, you'd imagine we're just in a better place at the moment.
Great stuff, Bernard. Great chatting, as always. England versus Ireland, 4:45 on Saturday. Imagine here live commentary on RTE Radio 1's Saturday Sport. We are taking a short break and then we're going to chat football. But before we do, just to update you on some Europa League scores. Liverpool are 2-0 up away to Sparta Prague. A penalty from Alex McAllister and Darwin Nunez with their second goal. Roma 1-0 at home to Brighton. Carabag leading Bayer Leverkusen 1-0. And in the Conference League, Aston Villa are in Holland. It is 0-0 against Ajax in the pick of the Conference League fixture. Stick with us. Rebecca Cray and Anthony Pine are standing by to chat Ireland Women's National Team and indeed preview the upcoming League of Ireland Women's Premier Division season.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
Football.
Yeah, the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team will host both England and Sweden at the Aviva Stadium as the fixture schedule was announced for the daunting Euro 2025 qualifying campaign. Well, already guaranteed a playoff, Ireland Gleeson side were handed an extraordinarily difficult qualification group containing three of the top five sides in the world. Ireland will begin their campaign away to France on Friday, April 5th, before returning to Dublin 4 days later to host the reigning champions England on Tuesday, April 9th. The game has been switched from their usual home in Tala to the Aviva Stadium. They will remain on Lansdowne Road for next fixture at home to Sweden on Friday, May 31st. Ireland travel to Sweden for the return fixture on Tuesday, June 4th. In the final window, Ireland are away to England on July 12th for their final game at home to France on July 16th. RTÉ Sports, Anthony Pine and Rebecca Cray, current Shelburne backroom team member in the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division, join me to preview the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division. But firstly, to give us their reaction to the fixtures that are out. Obviously, Rebecca, I would say it's music to your ears to see the national team back at the Aviva.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, you want these kind of games on your doorstep, and obviously we've had them on Tala for so long, but now to have such a calibre game in our national stadium is well overdue. The group itself, I don't think we could have hoped for worse in terms of the levels, but look, we love a challenge in this nation, as we know, and the girls will be chomping at the bit to get going against such big nations and successful nations in this, you know, in the European competitions. But yeah, that first game against England at home will be fantastic, and hopefully we can get record crowds out to the game.
Were you grimacing when you saw the draw?
I was and I wasn't. I was kind of thinking to myself, right, in terms of qualification, it's kind of one of them, you're like, I don't know how this is going to go. But in terms of getting to see these kind of, you know, teams and players here in this country will be fantastic. You know, obviously I know it, with England there's such a pull now with the WSL, you know, obviously we have our own Katie McCabe playing out there, but you know, Leah Williamson coming over, probably, you know, with Leslie Russo, Beth Mead, all these kind of players who will attract, you know, crowds in themselves. So yeah, look, it's going to be tough, but look, I'm sure the girls are more than up for it.
Anthony, not to be a downer on this, it is good to see the women's national team back at the Aviva Stadium. However, the fixtures, the way they are at the moment, Friday night they open the campaign away to France. As it stands, that's clashing with a League of Ireland men's schedule of fixtures. And then the home match against England, it's on a Tuesday, and it's clashing with the Champions League as well. So it's kind of a two-pronged question to you. Is it disappointing that it's clashing with matches? I know it's very difficult and you can't have everything in a perfect world. And also, midweek, it's a week now, and we're trying to attract families, young children to these matches.
Well, it is disappointing. I think the England game is also 3 days after Leinster play Leicester in the Champions Cup. So that they will have to do quite a bit of work on the pitch just to make sure it's okay and obviously get chopped up a little bit. So yeah, look, it is disappointing. I think it was always going to be that Friday, Tuesday slot. That was always the way it's going to be with UEFA. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, the Ireland-England game is going to clash with one of the men's Champions League quarterfinals. You just hope that, look, there was almost 36,000 people at the Northern Ireland game last September. That was a Saturday lunchtime kickoff. I think the FAI now are going to have to they're going to have to work hard, and I'm sure they will be thinking about this, and would have been thinking about this a long way out, because this was always on the cards. They were always going to play at least one of these qualifiers at the Aviva Stadium. So now they really have to sell it and drum it home and give, you know, give themselves every opportunity of bringing a huge crowd to that game against England in particular, because it's the first home game. The pitch, I actually looked at the pitch dimensions. Tala is a metre shorter and a metre narrower. So it's not that, it's not that the Aviva is it kind of seems like it's a really big open pitch. It's actually not. The difference is obviously the stand. It's a huge arena. So it's really important that you fill that ground. Like, you know, you've home advantage. That's the great thing about Tala, and the players love playing at Tala because it feels, it's a partisan vocal crowd. And a half empty stadium, you know, you're not going to get that with a half empty stadium. So it's really important that Ireland get a big, big crowd. They should be aiming for 35,000-40,000 regardless. I know it's on a Tuesday and it's midweek and it's clash with other games, but still, this is our national team. It's our national women's team. They've been brilliant the last few years. They've genuine aspirations to get into another major tournament here. It's going to be really difficult for them. And I think as well, Shane, hasn't really been spoken about as much, the fact, it's not just the fact that the group is really tough. You have to play these elite teams in a, like, there's only a 3-day turnaround. Like, you have to empty the tank against France in Metz. That first game will be played in Metz. And then you have to try and rally yourself to play England again. So everything they can get from the crowd, every little advantage Eileen Gleeson can get, they'll be looking for, and we'd be hopeful that they do get a big turnout. I think they will, but as I said, you know, you'd hope that the FAI will be thinking about how can we incentivise this and make sure that we give ourselves as good a chance as possible to get really healthy attendance for that game.
I'm right in saying the kickoff times haven't been announced yet, so even with midweek matches, if it isn't 7, if it's 5:45, because a couple of matches in Tala I think have been played at an earlier kickoff time, and again people getting from work and so on, and perhaps that does suit younger fans as well, earlier to bed and whatnot. It's kind of basic logistical things like that as well. At the final match of campaign, Tuesday July 16th, Ireland are at home to France. The venue hasn't been confirmed for that, Anthony.
No, venue has yet to be confirmed. You would think it would be Tala. It won't be the Aviva Stadium. The Aviva Stadium, the FAI have confirmed that the Aviva is not available to them for the month of July. So you would think Tala, it's their home. There's now 10,000 capacity. Obviously, it's, I mean, potentially, hopefully, Ireland still have a chance by the time they get that. So an absolutely enormous game, potentially, because it would almost be like a playoff. You know, if Ireland are still in the run to get in the top two, to get to the Euros, it would be enormous. But it's interesting that they haven't confirmed it. Maybe they're leaving their options open. Maybe they could take the team somewhere else, to another venue around the country, possibly. At this point, you would think it's Tala, but as I said, there's been nothing confirmed for that game yet.
Well, it'll be interesting. I'm not sure if Supervalue Páirc Chaoimh is up to UEFA spec. And that's a genuine question in terms of, I know there's been rugby played there, but perhaps we might see matches outside of Dublin. I think it's a bit too soon for Caseman Park as a stance.
A little bit too soon.
Just a bit too soon.
Brilliant though, Shane, if that was the case.
No, genuinely.
It would be, of course. I mean, just, we have Denise O'Sullivan back in our hometown as well, you know, and it would be fantastic. But
Thomond, even.
Yeah.
Thomond. So there are options if it did leave Dublin, but we will see. At least they are back in Aviva for the first couple of matches. And as Anthony said, it's going to be interesting with the tight turnarounds against top nations in the world. League of Ireland Women's Premier Division kicks off this weekend. Shells host Sligo in Talca Park in its centenary year, 100 years of being a Dublin historical landmark. 2 p.m. kickoff for that. DLR Waves are also in Dublin. They're at home to Shamrock Rovers in the Dublin Derby. 4 p.m. Cork City host Piemont United at 5 p.m. Bows are on the road there. Travel down south to Wexford, 6 p.m. And Athlone Town, President's Cup champions, take on the current Avenir Cup champions Galway United. 7:30 kickoff for that one. Lots of narratives, lots of stories to get through. Before I get your thoughts, in fact, let's hear from Piemont United manager, because they're the current League of Ireland champions, James O'Callaghan, on how he sees his team going in to this league campaign.
The opposition teams are getting better all the time, but you know, we do still always feel like we kind of are underdogs going into every season, you know, so we just always just try and do our best.
Why is that, in terms of feeling like underdogs?
Again, as people know, you know, Piemont were a standalone club in the National League, so we wouldn't have the resources that the other teams have. So, but we try to be the best at what we can be in terms of our training environment is really, really positive. And we have a really good kind of culture in the team, a real togetherness in the team, which I think really helps motivate us.
So Pimlico United won the league by 6 points. They only lost two matches out of their 20 league matches played. Rebecca Cray, would you agree with James O'Callaghan's underdog description?
He loves a mind game, doesn't he? I totally understand where he's coming from in terms of not being affiliated with a League of Ireland setup. But, you know, Piemont set the standards early doors, you know, in this league, and they continue to do so, and they have a high calibre of player, you know, and I know the club look after them really well out there. Some great volunteers involved in Piemont as well. You know, they obviously went in last year. I think they fell under the radar in a sense that, you know, the eyes were on the likes of maybe Shells, Shamrock Rovers, Athlone, you know, who kind of made statements of you know, bringing certain players in, certain players left clubs, all that kind of stuff. But look, they're the team to beat. In my opinion, Athlone as well are up there. You know, they've proved themselves now in the FAI Cup, and it's a case of going now for the league, to try and make their stamp on that.
Second place in that league. I'm going to put the Shelburne question to you, Anthony, because I feel you'd be, not that you wouldn't be impartial, Rebecca, but in terms of, it's a new young manager, Owen Whelan, that's come in. So with that brings inexperience, and it's the complete opposite, I suppose, from what Noel King brought to the setup as well. Do you feel Shells have a point to prove to themselves considering how last season finished?
I don't know about that. I just think they're always thereabouts. I mean, they have retained most of the squad from last season, so loads of experience there, but some really good young players as well. Like I thought, was at the cup final, I thought Hannah Healy was the best player on the pitch. She's 15, absolutely fantastic player. They have brought in Jess Gargan, Mia Dodd, Ron McLaughlin. Like, I mean, that's a massive signing. So, like, they're always thereabouts. They're seasoned, and they will expect that of themselves. So I'm not sure about having a point to prove.
But not coming away with silverware. Surely that would have been the aim, and they'll be chomping at the bit in that regard.
It will have stung them, but no more than any season. I think when they sit down at the start of the season, they'll think they'd expect to be challenging for cups and leagues. I think that's just in the DNA of that club. So, I mean, yeah, look, I guess they can use something like that as a sort of, because it would have hurt them, you know, to lose the final the way that they did as well. But I just think that's the expectation at Shells, and you're kind of looking at this league. It's such an open league. I mean, it's pretty difficult. Like, I don't think many would have picked out Piemont this time last year. And sitting here now looking at it really is hard to pick. I know we're going to talk, I'm sure we'll touch on the likes of Athlone and Shamrock Rovers, but like even a team like Galway, like, you know, there's always seems to be a team coming up the rails because the strength of the division is getting stronger every year, and players are there's better depth of panels, and it's just more competitive every single year. But look, you would expect Shells to be there, but as I said, they've lots of quality, lots of experience. Interesting manager actually Owen Whelan coming in. Now that in itself tends to freshen a squad up. You know, Noel had done really well there, but I mean, there for a while. So that in itself just keeps players on their toes. So, you know, as I said, they'll be in the mix.
To follow up Anthony's point there, Rebecca, it's probably fair to say you could nearly perhaps split the league in half in terms of teams that are going to be competing for the league, and perhaps the other teams that will have their own personal targets. But looking at the upper half of the table with the teams that Anthony has outlined, is this going to be perhaps the most open league campaign that we've had?
Yeah, I think I say it every year, like it's such a, you know, competitive league, and this year even more so again. You know, looking at the league from last year, I don't think anyone would ever look at that at the start saying that Wexford are going to finish seventh, you know. And I think the likes of them coming back into the fold now, you know, they maybe have the point to prove across the league to
redeem
themselves.
Players coming back as well.
Sorry?
Players coming back.
Yeah, Ellen Malloy is back in, Della Doherty's back in again, you know, and they still have that core group of experience with Kylie Murphy, Nikki Sinnott, Lolly Conlon, Kira Rossiter. There's a huge kind of mix in there, and obviously now with their new manager in Hugh Strong, they've got that added incentive, as you said, when new managers come in, which we've had a few of them across the league. You know, there's going to be that freshen up and want to go and do well for them. You know, so yeah, look, it's a case that it is going to be very open. I know Sligo last year even put it up to I know watching, you know, a Shells games, they put it up to us at the time as well. So yeah, it's quite hard to call, and yeah, I think we'd be doing unjust to the, say, lower end of that league with the way it finished last year, to say that they won't do as well this year.
Athlone Town, Anthony, so they've obviously done so well in cups, but looking at their league form, 2022 they were 2 points behind first place, whereas last year they were 17 points behind the league winners P-Mount. So that's obviously something that Kieran Kilduff will be looking to rectify. Can they translate, or is it even possible to translate cup form, if you will, to a league campaign?
Well, I think their form from when Kieran came in to the end of the season in the league as well, if you look, yeah. they just took off. They were transformed when he came in. He made a couple of signings as well. So they have, it's almost like from the second half of last season, that momentum, they look to sustain that momentum. They've won the President's Cup as well. So if you think of when Leicester won the Premier League, like, they almost got relegated. But actually, if you looked at the last sort of 10 games of the previous Premier League season, their record was brilliant and they just maintained it. So they look to just maintain what they've built from the second half of last season. They have lost Dana Sheriff, which is that's a significant loss for them, because she was the league's top scorer last season, 13 goals. She's gone to Switzerland. They brought in Casey Howe, looks like a good signing from Sion Swiss, Northern Ireland international, and we'll hope that she can kind of fill that void in terms of goals. They do still, the likes of Maddie Gibson will probably be a bit more responsibility on her. So they've lots of quality, a good manager. It's, you know, it's a 20 game season, so you have to start quick. You have to, you know, there's not, as you said, they were 17 points behind. Like, yeah. they finished the season like a train. It's just, if you give yourself a big gap to make up, you run out of road, basically. So you kind of do have to make a good, strong start, and I'm sure they'll be well aware of that. But the signs are good for them. You know, I think they'll go close, I have to say, this year. I do think they'll go close. And when you get a taste of silverware like that, they never won two trophies in the last few months, Cup final and the President's Cup. It only makes you hungry for more. So, you know, Athlone will be an interesting watch this year.
Well, Athlone were managed by Kieran Kilduff last year. They will be managed by Kieran Kilduff this year, but he won't have Ken Kiernan by his side, because he's the new Bowes manager, and he was speaking to Damian O'Mara at the league launch a few weeks back.
Speaking to the other coaches today, and obviously kind of, it's a very small pool of players. Yeah. Well, it was a small pool of players until, you know, some teams started bringing in players from America and Canada and, you know, potentially across Europe. So I suppose there'll be a few kind of dark horses in terms of, like, trying to figure out, you know, maybe how their season will go. But then you've got the quality in Shells, you've got the quality in Pays. Obviously, Athlone have strengthened. So, like, there's just, it's totally wide open.
Totally wide open, a few dark horses, according to Ken Kiernan. Rebecca, do you feel Bowes might be one of those dark horses, or looking at the age profile of their squad, do you feel perhaps that Ken is just building something at Bowes nicely for not just this season, but perhaps the next couple of years?
Yeah, potentially. I know he's kind of, you know, brought in a few young players, and the likes of Savannah Kane, who's only 16, midfielder from Shells, really, really promising. Shells unlucky to lose her. She was definitely a name on the books for the senior squad in years to come. She's definitely going to be one to watch for them. I know they lost the likes of Niamh Pryor, Rachel Doyle, Mia Dodd, you know, Aoife Robinson, all kind of players that have been in and around the league in the last 2-3 years, but has also brought across, you know, Alana McAvoy from Rovers, who was prolific in front of goal, you know, can play in the wing as well, good attacking player. Tegan Ruddy, who's had spells across the water, you know, or you know, in Scandinavia. Kira Smith, then, another one that has come across from Terenure Rangers. She had a stint on the Underdogs. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it is a case of just building right now for Ken. He'll probably say the same himself, you know, in terms of what they're planning, hoping for a successful season, I'm sure. But yeah, definitely in a building stage at the minute.
It's interesting, Anthony, with a lot of new managers. Rebecca mentioned Hugh Strong leaving the Shells underage setup with Wexford now. Ken Kiernan, obviously, in his first year as being the main man as opposed to an assistant manager. We see the likes of Tommy Hewitt, who's done well at Athlone. He's now with Sligo. Dominic Foley at Treaty United as well. It's very difficult to see how these managers will impact their respective clubs.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things about the league in the last couple of years. Like, it's a league for young players. Like, we currently have a senior Ireland manager who's really in tune with the league. You know, if you look at the players she's brought in the last few camps, that she's obviously leaning quite heavily on the P-Mount players. Ellen Dolan, McLaughlin, Jess Fitzgerald, Freya Healy. But it's also a breeding ground potentially for coaches, you know, to cut their teeth. Now, Dominic Foley has a lot of, you know, really interesting and impressive playing career. And I think by his own admission, when he came in, he actually, I mean, he has said this himself. He wasn't hugely knowledgeable about the league, but what he has is Ciarán McCormack, and she has tons of knowledge and really good contacts. So they brought in some players from Canada. They brought in a former under 20 international, Katie Books, and so working in tandem with what he has behind the scenes there means that, you know, he will be, it will be interesting to see the impact he has. I know what you're saying, because it's very difficult to predict how anybody adjusts to the league, particularly when you're coming in fresh and you're not really embedded in it. You haven't got a massive amount of knowledge about it, but what he does have, good people around him there to give him a chance and to lean him towards. Players are the biggest thing. Recruitment is always the most important thing, isn't it? You know, particularly in the League of Ireland, because, you know, every winter there's such a turnover of players, so it's very difficult to know, where do I go? You know, who can I need a midfielder? Like, should I?
Ken Kiernan alluded to there that it used to be, perhaps in your playing day, Rebecca, that it was such a small player pool. But even the players you're mentioning, Andy, these players from America, from Canada, that are coming to play in the league.
Well, we've seen it. Athlone have done a really good job of using the market cleverly and using what they have there in terms of getting players in and being able to accommodate them and stuff like that. So, it is. You find that when you're talking to players, you know, we had a cup semi-final day at Tallaght Stadium last season, and so many of the players are from different clubs. They all know each other because they've all played and coached each other. You know, it is, there's so much moving around, but it is a big advantage to know the market and know what's out there. And what could potentially fit what you need.
I think before you had the likes of the Canadians and US team, players coming over, it was mainly Galway, you know, attracting them over for the likes of scholarships within the University of Galway or whatever it was. And I think since Heather O'Reilly came over to Shells, you've seen a bit of a kind of, you know, a breeding ground now for the likes of, you know, even at Shells with Christy Gray come across and Maggie Pearce from the States. Janaya Robinson has come into Athlone there. You know, and obviously a few more then throughout the league as well. So it's great to see, obviously, the pool. You know, I think the furthest player we ever had at the likes of Raheny and Shells was from Limerick. So that's as far as we got back then. But yeah, no, it is. It's great to see the league growing.
Absolutely. And that will mean that the pressure will be on the likes of Phil Trill and Danny Murphy, the more established coaches at Galway and Cork respectively, and indeed Laura Heffernan in her first full season at DLR. And it's good to see a female manager as well, the only one in the league. We have ran out of road. Before we do go, quick fire predictions. Rebecca Cray, I'll start with yourself. League champions.
I'm going to be killed for this.
Who's it going to be?
I'm going to go Shells. The girls are raring.
Cup champions. Has to be someone different.
We go Wexford. Like a cup.
Wexford Cup champions. Dark horses?
I think Sligo could be in there.
Sligo. Okay. Top scorer?
If she stays fit, potentially Ellen Malloy.
Okay. And then best signing of the season?
I think I have to go with Roma McLaughlin.
Roma McLaughlin back at Shells. Yeah. And breakout star?
And another one, I think, I'm going to go with Shells. Lucy O'Rourke. She's definitely one to watch.
Lucy O'Rourke. Yes. Okay. Anthony, perhaps your answers mightn't be as Shells-centric. League champions for yourself?
I'm going to say Athlone to win the league.
Athlone to win the league. Cup champions?
Galway.
Galway Cup champions after their Avenir Cup success. Dark horses?
Can I say Galway Dark Horses?
Yeah. No, that's fair. Even though, yeah. Top scorer?
I'll say Ellen Dolan from
Pease. Ellen Dolan, Pease. Best signing?
Casey Howe.
And breakout star?
Again, I mean, she's only 15, so I'm going to say Hannah Healy, even though she's already pretty established.
Absolutely. Anthony, Rebecca, thank you both very much. Just before we do take a break, we do want to extend our deepest sympathies to the family and friends of Sonia Hoey, who sadly passed away. Sonia etched herself in the history book, scoring the winner for Dundalk in the Women's FAI Cup Final in 2005 at Lansdowne Road. A wonderful person and a brilliant footballer. We are going to take a break. Then we're chatting athletics with Greg Allen and Kieran McGean.
RTE 2FM.
On 2FM. Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of this evening's Game On. I'm delighted to say, with thanks to Flowgas, the official energy partner of Team Ireland for Paris 2024 Olympic Games, Kieran McGean joins us on the line. And also in studio is a man with encyclopedic knowledge of Irish athletics, RT Sports, Greg Allen. Kira, first and foremost, thanks so much for taking the call. How are you? How's the body? Because I think I'm right in saying you had a slight hamstring strain. That's why we didn't see you in Glasgow. Do we have Kira? Perhaps there are some gremlins in the system. However, I did say we do have a man with an encyclopedic knowledge of Irish athletics.
And I'm sure you can big up the hopes for Kieran McGeehan in the year ahead, because obviously there was an injury in Glasgow that missed the indoor season. We will hope to see her at the Europeans perhaps, and we'll obviously be a medal hopeful. So the expectations are high for Kira, Greg.
Yeah, look, I think Kira's okay. She's over the injury, and it's a hamstring injury, which I don't think is in any way going to threaten her preparations. We're only in early March here, all the way to... obviously, there's European Championships before there's Paris. Kira, are you on the line there to tell us?
I think we do. We've eradicated the gremlins, so we have. So we can go to source. Kira, how are you? How's the body?
Straight to the source. Yeah. The body's very good. Thank you very much. Yeah, I had a little bit of a hamstring niggle early doors this year. So it just set me back ever so slightly. Did a bit of cross training instead of running. So decided with the sports doc that I use to take a conservative approach in the recovery to that, with the vision of the Olympics being the full focus. So, but thankfully that was the right thing to do. I'm back fighting fit, training's going well. So the same thing happened to me last year. I was in a boot in January due to a perineal injury. So I'm hoping this is a good omen, because last summer went fairly well.
You know, it's funny when you get an injury, and I know it's nobody wants to get an injury, but there are times when you get injuries and it kind of refocuses your mind and takes you away from the repetitive nature of what you have to do in winter. But to some degree, do you do thinking when you're injured about, oh gosh, how much the sport means to you? Obviously that you want to get back on track, but you also have to be aware that you know the odd injury is not going to stop you from being able to reach your peak.
That's exactly it. I think I take a lot of strength from what's happened to me in the past, and certainly whenever I was in this position last year, going into a World Championships year, I was really worried. I was in a boot for the whole of January. I basically wanted to just hide away in the house and not come out, but I was on camp in Flagstaff. I went and cross-trained. There was also a little stress. I was like, am I not going to be able to get fit enough for the summer? Thanks to last year, I've taken confidence in knowing that, like, it's not always going to be a smooth path. I've had seasons where the season that I had the Europeans and the Commonwealth, I got COVID that, like, literally in the middle of that summer, and had to miss a week of training, and I still had a phenomenal summer. So I'm learning to be a very resilient athlete, because quite often it isn't perfect. We have to be used to dealing with the ups and the downs, and for me, I feel like I've built a good resilience around that. And like as you said, you have to look at the positives. It gives me a chance to take a wee step back, to take a break from the pressure of always having another season to go and race. Last year I didn't race an indoor season and had a really good outdoors, and I actually went into this indoor season thinking, should I like not fully focus on it, considering it was so beneficial last year not to do it? Fate took that decision out of my hands anyway. So look, things happen for a reason, and maybe this is the best prep for my Olympic Games.
How much of an emphasis have you had to put on the mental side of things to ensure that the injuries aren't playing on your mind? Because you mentioned everything there, that there have been setbacks in your preparation, and that's not, of course, you've mentioned the calf injury on the eve of the Tokyo Games as well. So that must be something that's niggling you in a way somewhat, or is that something that you're able to just park?
To be honest, I work on the mental side of all aspects of the sport throughout the year. So it's not solely dealing with the injuries. It's all the other things, dealing with the nerves and the pressure of wanting to perform and the pressure that I put on myself. Just the usual humdrum of life that everybody else has to deal with. I also chat to my sports psych about that. So to be honest with you, injury stuff is often a lot easier to manage than the doubts that sometimes creep in even whenever you're perfectly healthy. I've been unfortunate in my career to have a good few injuries, so maybe I've built some sort of resilience to be able to cope with it. Whenever I have a plan from my physio and the doc, and I know exactly what I have to do, it tends to give me a little hyper-focus in on that period of time. And yeah, look, it's the type of thing that quite often you're in the situation where there's actually nothing else I can do other than recover as best I can from this instance and try to learn from it. If you got hurt for any particular reason, unfortunately for me, it was just a complete freak accident, just my hamstring just pinged a little bit. But yeah, I certainly chat to my sports psych about that, chat to my coach Helen, chat to my boyfriend Thomas, he's very good, about if I actually have any stresses and worries. I'll be sitting down with Helen and having a good chat with her just to plan our next few weeks, because it's good for me to get a focus of where our goal is now, because obviously I would have hoped to race indoors, had a little bit of downtime and got back up. I'll be in a similar position, so I'm like, this is good, but let me just get my head around it, because I'm I feel I'm playing catch up ever so slightly, but I'm probably actually in a similar position as I would hope to be, working on a base. And as Greg mentioned, it's a European year as well. That'll be early doors in the season. So I'm just getting myself ready to get out and race Euros.
You're based in Manchester, Ciara, and Glasgow was only just up the road. So you possibly would have taken Glasgow in, you know, the scheme of the calendar of the year because it was so close to you. When you saw the final, assuming that you had got to the final, it was a very fast race, true run race, very eventful race. Would you have liked that final? I think you would have.
Oh, I definitely would. Whenever I was coming into this season, I was in really good shape. December, I was in flying form. I wished I had raced a good hard 5K in December on the track because I think I would have ran well. Yeah, looking at that, I was like, this is a fantastic race. The girls went out in the 3K and it was fast and it was furious and there was times that were dropping and I couldn't help but watch and wonder what I would have done if I was in that race, what time I would have ran and where I would have placed. Similarly in the 15, I probably would have focused on the 3K over the indoor season, but in the 15 you can't help but watch and go, where would I have been in that final? But that's just the nature of sport and the nature of athletics. I enjoyed watching, I enjoyed cheering on the Irish athletes. There were some really tough times for the girls up there in particular, and then also some fantastic times with the relay squad and Sarah Lavin. So there was plenty of things for me to take joy from. I wished I was up with the team, but good learning experience for a lot of Irish athletes.
Ciara, obviously we're in an Olympic cycle, so what's on the agenda next now? What will you be competing in between now and the summer, and what are the expectations? What are you looking to hit in terms of targets?
So my prep is going to be as similar as I can make it to last year, because we had a really good prep into the World Champs. Obviously it's a little different because we have another championship, so I'm going to head off to altitude camp mid-April, rolling into the end of May. I'll probably open up with an easy enough, hopefully, opener in Manchester. It's always interesting. I like to start with a more low-key meet. It's going to be a BMC in Manchester, but you quite often just get international athletes turning up anyway and we all end up having to run fast. But it's good. Hopefully that will blow the cobwebs a little bit because it'll have been a while since I raced. After that, possibly Stockholm Diamond League. You always are waiting for confirmation for these things. You just never know when you're going to get in. So I'll wait for the nod from my agent and that will roll into European Champs. So that's roughly my plan as of now. After that, I'll be back up to the mountains for another big block of altitude training, which is exactly what I did ahead of the World Champs, with dropping down to some other races peppered in there ahead of the Olympic Games. So as closely as I can, I'm replicating last year in the hope that I can match or do better than I did at the Worlds.
Ciara, in the last couple of years, we've seen the blossoming of the talent that we saw when you were one of the world's best juniors 13 years ago, when you were world junior silver medalist, European junior silver medalist, and then you had the kind of 10 years of progression. But the last 2 years have just exploded. Do you now kind of really, you know that what you're doing, you're really confident in what you're doing, you know that you're one of the best in the world, you ran just about the perfect race in the final of the World Championships in Budapest. It just happened to be that there were three other athletes running slightly more perfect races in front of you. But do you feel that sort of confidence that you have now in both your mental ability, you're working with a very good sports psychologist, the Olympic sports psychologist, Kate Kirby, you've got, you know, the best coach around it for you right now in Helen. All of these things coming together, do you just feel this is your time, and obviously being an Olympic year, it's a good time for it to be your time?
Yeah, I definitely do. I feel that I've been growing in confidence over these last few years. As you said, I was a very good junior and I felt that I hadn't quite reached my potential at senior level. Thankfully, that's kind of come into fruition over the last few years for me, thankfully, with medals and times dropping the way I would like them to. I take a huge amount of confidence with how last year went. Placing fourth on a global stage was phenomenal, and to come away disappointed with that is a testament of where my ambitions are. So I definitely take a huge confidence going into that and feel that I've learned an awful lot. I feel confident in my ability and my the fact that I deserve to be there and that I'm every bit as good as every girl up in the field. I always felt I did think that and that I should be there. Now I know I belong, and that whenever girls see me on the start line, they'll fear me too, which is a great place to be. And look, fourth last year just gave me even more fire in my belly to strive for that little bit more. So it's interesting. Whenever I ran 3:55, I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't know if I'd ever run that fast. Now I have the mentality of, why would I ever set a limit on myself? If I can run 3:55, why not faster? Which is an exciting place to be in. So I'm looking forward to the hard work ahead, because I'm not in 3:55 shape right now. But there's something so exciting about knowing that I am going to work my bottom off to get in the best shape I can for that Olympic Games. There's going to be some really tough training sessions ahead for me this summer, and there's sheer joy in that I'm going to work my hardest to try to be up there, possibly on the podium of an Olympic Games. To go into an Olympic year with that as my aim is a very exciting thing.
Well, here's hoping that you do get Olympic success. Kieran McGain, thank you very much. Greg Allen, thank you very much as well. Eileen Gleeson is, of course, the manager of Ireland's women's national team. That is the answer to our competition. Congratulations to Alison Brady from Drogheda, who has just won a gift hamper packed full of Dove Men Plus Care products from deodorant to body wash. Plus, their name is now in tomorrow's draw for that amazing €1,500 Dove Sports package. The 2FM Live at the RT Choice Music Prize in Vicar Street, presented by Bette da Silva, is coming up next. Interviews and all the live performances from the RT Choice Music Prize, which is now one of the biggest events in the Irish music calendar, followed by the Choice After Party with January Winter until 1 a.m. from all the Game On team. It is bye for now.
Live across the nation
and on the RTE radio player, this is
RTE 2FM.